We begin the current daf in Subis Daf Yud. We begin on the top line of the Amud, where the Gemara continues the discussion from the previous daf. That is, there were two opinions that were saying the same chiddush, which is when a man says Pesach Pesuch Mitzasi. If the morning after the chuppah, when they consummated the relationship, comes to Bez, and he says that although I married her on the assumption that she was a besula, but I found that there was no resistance and that the euphemism of that there was an opening and that she wasn't a besula, that there were no besulim, there was no hymen. And essentially he's saying that it's a problem that obviously she had to be with someone before him. Now on that, the Rebbe Elazar had said, he's nemalo Yisraelov, so he's believed to say that she's forbidden to him, as we had explained, that it's talking about a case when there's one suffix, where either she's Eishes Kayin, or because she was Pchusa Mibas Gimel Shon Miyam Echad, she was younger than three when she had been engaged, hence there's only one doubt of his Ba'inus Baratzin, therefore you go L'chumra, she's forbidden to him, she was Mazana. Now Shmuel added on another chiddush. He said, not only is he forbidden to make her forbidden to him, as the din of Shavei Nafshe Chaticha Deisur illustrates, but he could even say that her kesuba, she's not getting. He could be mastered her kesuba, which is what the Gemara comes to explain now. Idma we learned. Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Shmuel, in the name of Shmuel, which he's the one that authored this halacha, Mishum Reb Shimon ben Elazar. In other words, if the halacha of a kesuba would be biblical, then of course he would not be believed by what he's saying, which is unverifiable if that was the case or not, and it's only known on what he's saying. Truth is, if it was biblical, you would need witnesses to testify that she was not a besula. And only then would you be able to say that you're not paying her ksuba. Now, however, the halacha actually is that her ksuba is chachamim tiknulem levnais Yisrael. It was a rabbinic institution that the rabbis made for the Jewish women, the besula masayim, that a besula gets 200 in her ksuba, and for amana she gets half of that, she gets amana. So it's a rabbinic halacha de ksuba. Now, therefore, that's how he explains halacha of Shmuel, v'heim heminuhu, and those same sages believed the husband, Shem Amar, Pesach Besuch, Mitzasi, that if he says that she was not a besula, I found it open, then he's believed. In other words, this is based on what's commonly called heim amru, v'heim amru. Those same rabbis, the same chacham that instituted the ksuba in the first place, they also said that the husband is believed to make her lose that ksuba if he claims that it was Pesach Pesuch. And that's how he's believed. But of course, if the ksuba was deraisa, one person's claim, which is unverifiable, where he wants to get out of paying a payment, he would not be believed to be mafsid or ksuba. Now, but the Gemara asks, Im Kain, if it's so, okay, fine, we understand what's called Heim Amru, they said he has to give her the ksuba, but they also said that if he makes such a claim, he doesn't have to give the ksuba. But if it is within his domain to just remove himself from having to pay it by making this claim, which is unverifiable, we cannot substantiate that necessarily, so then maha ilu chacham betekantim. What did the chachamim accomplish with their whole takana of a ksuba? The whole institution of ksuba was that it shouldn't be kala be'in of loitzia. He shouldn't just, on the flip, just go ahead and, okay, you know what? I don't want to be married to you anymore. He won't do it just off the cuff, impulsively, because he knows he has to pay a ksuba. It's not such an easy thing, so he'll give it time. Now, but if you can do it without consequences, because you could just say, yeah, it was Pesach Pesuach, and therefore I don't have to give a ksuba. So what was the whole purpose of an institution if the husband has a way out anyway? So that Amar Rava says that we don't have to have such a concern that every single husband who wants to get out of being married to his wife and doesn't want to say the ksuba will make such a claim. Rather, we can assume that what he's saying is true. And the reason is because if this new husband, as the case is only obviously when it just happened, because it doesn't happen 10 years down the line, if it really was that he hated her, well then, chazaka, there's a halachic presumption that ein adam tereach besud mafsida, no person would go through the effort and the money and the time of making this elaborate wedding to get married, and then it's a one big loss because he's not being married to that woman. What was the point of investing so much money? Rather, he would have divorced her right away. For the fact that he had this whole huge wedding, and then he consummates the relationship that evening, then the next morning he says, the chazaka tells us that he's saying the truth, and that's why, since it's within the rabbinic domain, we don't need to aid him, as if it were, let's say, in the biblical component. It's just rabbinic. So they said you have to give the ksuba. They could believe him. And the reason why we do believe him, and that we don't say that what's the whole point of the ksuba, he's just going to get out of it anyway, because the chazaka tells us that he's saying the truth. because a husband would not go ahead through the expenses and the time and the effort of making this wedding and the next morning having it all considered one big loss. It must be they're saying the truth. And that's why he's saying that it was Pesach Pesuch. Related to Gemara says, Tanu Lina Braisa, Hayil Uknas Chacham, who since the Ksuba is a rabbinic penalty, so like as we just explained, it's a rabbinic halacha, so like take ve'elim in the ziburis, so therefore if she's coming to collect her Ksuba from her husband or her husband's estate, and he has different tiers, different levels of the quality of his property, let's say he has what's called Idis, which is the prime, ziburis, which is the lowest grade, and Bainis is somewhere in the middle, so she can't say, give me the Idis or the Bainis, in the amount of how much I'm owed in our ksuba. Rather, if he comes, he can give her even the worth and the value of the ziburis, because since it's only rabbinic halacha, so then you only have to give from the lowest grade. Now the Gemara wonders on the terminology of the braisa. Knosa? Ksuba is rabbinic penalty? My knosa, what type of penalty? In other words, what wrong did the husband do that we're penalizing him by having to give the ksuba? There's nothing, every husband gives the ksuba. The Gemara says, what it means is, since the rabbinic enactment, as we said before, so they take ve'elim in the ziburis, therefore she only collects from the ziburis, from the lowest grade of his assets. Now, however, the Gemara continues quoting from that braisa. However, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says, then no ksubis isha min hatayr. The halacha of a ksuba is biblical, as the Gemara will shortly explain, from the pasuk of Kesav Yishkol, where we find elsewhere in Shmoyis Chav Beis Tezayin, that he used the term of Kesav Yishkol, a certain amount of money you have to give to a woman that was violated and seduced, and with the terminology, as we'll see, of Meir Besulis tells us that every single Besula that gets married, her ksuba, also gets this amount, which obviously has this biblical allusion for it from the Torah. Now, so that was what, again, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel was arguing on the Tanakamu, who says it's rabbinic, and that's what gets ziburis. He says, no, it's actually min hatayr. Now, that the Gemara asks, did Rabbi Shimon Gamliel really say that the ksuba for a woman is min hatayr? But v'tanya learn the braisa, there's a pasuk in Shemais, which talks about mafata, a man that seduced a woman to have an intimate relation with him. So on that, the pasuk says that if the father refuses to give his daughter to such a man that seduced his daughter, so then kesev yishko, so this man, the one that was the seducer, has to give silver shkalim to the father, kamayr ha besulais, like the settlement that there are for besulais, for a woman that's a virgin. Now, what does that mean? So on that, the braisa darshins, she heizeh, that this woman that was seduced should be kamayr ha besulais, like the settlement of the besulis, which means to say, where else in the Torah do we find a settlement with a besula? That's by the parasha of a ma'anis, of a man that violated, that raped a woman. That talks about a besula there too. There the pasuk in Devarim Chav Beis says that we penalize the man 50 kesef because of the mayr ha besulis. So that's what we're saying over here by the mefata, where it doesn't say an amount. It's how much kesev yishkol should it be? It also should be 50 shkalim like it is by the ma'anis. Moreover, this comparison works the other way too. Umayr ha-besulis kezeh, and that over there by the ma'anis, where it says also the besulis, also is like this one. In other words, we're comparing the knas that there is by when a woman is seduced to the penalty that there is by when a woman is violated. In other words, we say that just like by Oynis, you have to give 50. Here also by Mefata, which doesn't say the amount, you also have to give 50. And it goes the other way too. It's just like over here, where it says Kesef, it means Shkalim, as it says Yishkol. So too over there, where it says Yishkol, is by Ma'anis, is also going to be Shkalim. Which, in other words, we would not have known. We would have thought maybe the money there is a reference to Ma'ah, which only is sixth of a shekel, and you get 50 mice, and that is what we learn now from Mefata to Aynes, that just like over here, it's Kesev Yishkol, also over there, it's going to be Shkol. So that's the halachas that we learn now, Ma'anes from Mefata, Mefata from Ma'anes. Now, the Tanakhama continues, and says, Mekan Samcha Chacham, L'Ksubas Isha V'Natar. Here, the rabbis saw an allusion, a biblical support for the halacha of a ksuba for a woman. In other words, from the fact that this term of how much you have to pay for the besula that was violated or seduced, it calls it mayhar besulas, the settlement of the besulas. Now, we find a similar term by Shechem, when he wanted to get married to Dina, that it says that you should impose upon me mayhar, So therefore, we see that that was obviously a reference to a gesubah, and we see over here this idea of the amount that's necessary for a besula, and that is that the idea of a gesubah obviously is supported in the biblical story of the Ma'ans and Mefata, together with the story of Shechem, which shows us that obviously a kesubah there is for a besula, that she gets a kesubah. Now that B'Shem Gamliel Omer, he says, no, kesubah si she'enim edivri Torah, der Misayfim, he says, no, that a kesubah is not biblical, it's only rabbinic. And that is, he argues in that halachic allusion to that from the Torah. Now, so that obviously contradicts what we just quoted from the other Raisa. We said that Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one that says kesubah yishim not Torah, and yet here we have a clearly contradictory Raisa that says that he holds that it's only rabbinic. So the Gemara answers, epoch, the last Raisa we quoted, you have to reverse the opinions. The Tanakhama is the one that holds it's rabbinic, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel is the one that holds that it's biblical. So the Gemara asks, my chaz is the abchad bas Raisa, where did you see fit to turn around the last Raisa? Epoch kamaisa, maybe switch around the first brisa. Maybe Shem Lil really holds that as rabbinic, and the first brisa was incorrect. So the Gemara says no, because Hashemina Leila Shem Lil, we know, and it's as it's brought elsewhere, that according to Shem Lil, the Amik Subas Isham the Raisa is clearly that his opinion is that a ksuba for a woman is biblical, and therefore you have to obviously switch to the attribution of the opinions in the second brisa. It's not like Ulina Mishnah, later on the Kuf Yudim Beis, where in the last Perek, the Mishnah teaches that if a man gets married to a woman in Eretz Yisrael, and he only divorces her in a different land of Kopitkaya, so the Tanakhama says that Aloch is that you give her the currency of Eretz Yisrael, which is a lesser value currency. Moreover, if you, let's say, married a woman in Kopitkaya, and you divorced her in Eretz Yisrael, you give her from the money of Eretz Yisrael for the amount that you had promised in the Ksuba, which, in other words, either way, you go in the more lenient, where no matter where you got married or divorced, if you started in Eretz Yisrael, you ended up in Kapitkaya, or started in Kapitkaya and you ended up in Eretz Yisrael, either one, you only have to give like the lesser valued currency, which is that of Eretz Yisrael, and that is because we go in leniently. Now, that the Mishnah there says, as I can more quote, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, he says that no, regarding the last case where you had married in Kapitkaya, which has the higher currency, and you divorced in Eretz Yisrael, noisin lo memois Kapitkaya. You have to give in the higher value currency of a Kapitkaya because that was where you had become obligated, where you meshabed yourself in the ksuba. And it's just like other loans when the value goes based on how you made yourself responsible. And that's because, as this is the proof, Rabbi Shimon Gamliel obviously holds that a ksuba is biblical. And that's a milv haksuba bat Torah, ksuba b'shtardom, a loan that's written in the Torah, which the Torah says you have to give the ksuba, it's like it's written in a document. And when you have a loan written in a document, wherever it was that the loan took place, that's the liability that you have, and therefore, although you're divorced in Eretz Yisrael, you have to make the payment as the money of Kapit, although you ended up divorcing Eretz Yisrael, you have to give the money of Kapit Kaya. So therefore, that's a clear support that Rishon Gamliel holds, like ksuba is deraisa, and that's why we have to reverse the attribution of the opinions in the later brisa. Or the Ibai Samad, the Gemara says you could resolve this seemingly clear contradiction of Shem Gamliel by saying that actually Kula, the entirety of that last Braisa that seemingly contradicted what we had said, that Shem Gamliel holds Ksubas Isha is Minatayra, that the whole Braisa is Shem Gamliel. It's actually O Shem Gamliel. It's not Tanakhama who says it's biblical and Shem Gamliel who says it's rabbinic. Now, if it's all him, how does that make sense? Because of Chasur Mechsa Baruch Hashem, the word's missing, and this is what it's supposed to say. Mikan samchu chacham l'ksubas isha min haTorah. Yes, as the Tanakhama, who, as we're saying, is really Rav Shimon Gamliel, as we have these other sources that say that a ksuba of a besula of a woman is biblical. Now that says k'moyer habesulais. So we see that a support for a halach of ksuba for besulais. Now that's biblical, and that's Rav Shimon Gamliel. Now, however, what the Braisa continued saying is the ksubas almana enim de retire elm de resefim. However, the ksuba for a widow, that's not biblical, that's only a rabbinic halacha. And that is what the Braisa ended, not that there's another statement from a different person, it's a continuation of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, and there's a shin there, that. Because Shimon Gamliel, because Rabbi Shimon Gamliel says, ksubas almana enim de retire elm de resefim, because the ksuba of a widow is not biblical, it's only rabbinic. And therefore, that resolves the inconsistency of these two braises that actually Shem Gamliel is, as we've seen elsewhere, that he holds Ksubas Isha. It's not Torah, that brisa when he says rabbinic was going only on the ksubis almana of a widow. Because as we said, the pasuk that has the support for it is Meir HaBesulis, that of Besula, not of almana. Now, continuing on these halachas that we had brought up in the previous daf and continue on this daf regarding when the husband says Pesach, Pesuch Mitzasi, so the Gemara brings different stories regarding this halacha of what's called Tainis Besulim. As we opened up this perek, this Masechta, with the getting married on Wednesday so that if he finds that she's not a Besula, the next morning he could come to Bezdin and say she wasn't a Besula. As we said in the previous daf, there's two claims he can make. Either Tainis Damim, which is they used a mapa cloth to verify if there was the hymenal blood, which happens when it's ruptured, and that's proof that she's a Besula. And if not, that seems to be that she wasn't. And then there's another one, which is that regardless of the blood or not, let's say she's a Mashpachas Dorkati that don't have blood, but just the fact that there was no resistance, that it was, so to speak, open, that would also verify, at least to him, and according to some opinions like Shmuel, that even to remove her from her ksuba, if he makes that claim the next day. So regarding this halacha, the Gemara brings the following incidents. Hahuda asli kamei de Rav Nachman. There was a certain man that came in front of Rav Nachman the morning after his chas. Now, Amalei Pesach Pesach Matzatzi says that he found the opening, the entryway open, and that seemingly that there was no membrane over there, that it wasn't closed. She's obviously was not a basula. So the Gemara says, Amalei Hu Rav Nachman. Nachman said to them, meaning to other people, Azvuhu, give this man lashes with kufri. To give him lashes with a branch of a palm tree, which specifically that because there's different protrusions like thorns, why should we give this man lashes? Because mevarachsa, meaning the Zionists, the harlots of this city, which are called mevarachsa, is obviously chavitele, obviously are constantly laying in front of him. In other words, from the fact that this man that just getting married now is obviously very proficient. He knows if the Pesach is Pesuach or Sasim, must have been that he was Mezana. And therefore, give him lashes, because he's obviously been doing inappropriate things. Now, on that, the Gemara asks, but Vaharav Nachman, who the Amim Mehemen, as we brought on the top of this Amit, if Nachman had said in name of Shmuel, that if a man comes the morning after his wedding, it says Pesach Pesach Mitzasi, he's believed, so why are we giving him lashes? So, the Gemara's first Herod says, you're right, Mehemen, he's believed. And therefore, you could even make the woman lose her ksuba. Put him as vin, like kufr, but we're going to give him lashes with this because obviously he was inappropriate up until now. How does he know that? What does it feel like? That if it's pesuach or sasim, he shouldn't be that well versed. And if he was, obviously he had been doing inappropriate things. Or the Gemara brings Rav Achi Mishan. Rav Achi answered that, no, actually it depends. And that's why I won't contradict Rav Nachman's previous halacha. Kan bebacher. This incident was talking about a bacher that he was never married before. Now that he just got married and he's claiming Pesach Pesuach, however, Rav Nachman says you give him lashes because he had the audacity to make such a claim. Of course we don't believe him. What does he know about if it's Pesuach HaSasim? It's his first time ever having cohabitation. Khan previously, on the top of the Amid, was talking about Benasui, a married man that had been married before, and now he's marrying what he thought was a Besula. Of course he's believed, because he knows what the experience is. And therefore, of course, we will not give such a person lashes, so it depends. But a bacher, that's what he says, that of course we're going to give such a person lashes and he's not believed. The Gemara brings another incident. There was a certain man that came in front of Gamliel. Amar Lei, Pesach Pesach Mitzasi says, that I found it open. So Amar Lei, Gamliel said to him, Shem Hitisa, maybe you had Bia slanted. And he explained to me, he says, look, let me explain to you with the following analogy. A man that was going in the darkness of the night. Now, Hita, if let's say when he comes to the door of his house, that's closed. Now, and it's even closed that there's something blocking it from opening it. But if he slants his way in, he can slip his way in, so then Mitzad Pesuach, he'll assume that, wait a second, the door is open. Now, but Lohit, if he's not going to slant his way in, Matzah, no, he'll see that the door is closed. And therefore, what he was saying was, look, you don't know, but maybe you entered in a slanty way, and therefore you didn't find any resistance, but doesn't mean it's not closed. Maybe there was Besulim, but there is a way to be Matzah and to go and avoid the Besulim, and therefore there's no raya that there wasn't any resistance, and therefore maybe she really is a Besulim. It could be that those that say that no, that if it wasn't done intentionally, it's not so common to suspect that the man, when he did bia, did it in the angled way. And therefore, we don't say that maybe he was mata. And therefore, if it was just innocently done, we assume yes. If he says pesach besuch, then it was open. But rather, the question that Rabbi Gamliel had asked him was hochi amal. He said shema b'mezid he tisa. Maybe deliberately you angled. Now, what that means is that v'akartu ladasha, and he said it again in this euphemism, that you ripped out the door, the abra, and the bar of the door. Now, what does that mean? So he says, look, I'll give you an analogy of what this could be compared to, that maybe what you did. A man that's going in the darkness and of nighttime. Now, hita b'mezid, if he goes and he deliberately smashes with his might the door, so mitzay pasuach, he didn't open the door, but he gives such a bang when he comes to the door, he's going to find that it's open. Now, loyhi to be mezid, but if he doesn't deliberately angle the door, so mitzay nol, he'll find the close, and therefore he's trying to say, maybe you did it with such kayach that to you it seemed open, but it wasn't open. If you would have gone without deliberate force, you would have found that there was resistance and that it was closed, and therefore you would have known that it really, she was a basula. The fact that you think it's pasuch maybe is because you don't notice how you had done it and you did it deliberately strong, and that's why. So therefore it's not clear what you're saying to be true, that it was actually pesach basuach. Nothing more continues with the taina of damim, which we spoke about up until now, incidents with pesach basuach. He was claiming she wasn't a basula because he didn't find any resistance. Now it's when he says that he's claiming she's not a basula because he didn't find any blood, which again is usually a sign of basulim, which when that's penetrated, that creates the dam basulim. So the Gemara says, Ahuda asala kamed Gamliel bar Rabbi. There was a certain person that came in front of Gamliel bar Rabbi, Amalei. So he said to him, look, Rabbi, my teacher, ba'alti v'lem etzasi dam. I had bia and didn't find any dam. So Amr loy, but the kala, the new wife said to him, he says, Rabbi, my teacher, besula isi. It's not true, I was a besula. So Amlam, he said to them, look, hevi ulo isi, so to bring me the cloth that was used generally to prove if she was a besula or not. Hevi ulo hasuda, they brought him the cloth. Now, and if you looked at it superficially, it seemed that there was no blood. But v'shari b'maye v'kibsa, but they soaked it in water and then they laundered it. Umatzolav kamati b'dam, and they found on the cloth many droplets of blood, and that was because the droplets of blood were covered over with the semen that was there from the tashmish, and therefore it seemed like there wasn't any, but he knew how to launder it and find that getting rid of the shechva zera to see the drops of blood. So Amalei, so he said to the chassan, leich zechei b'mekhecha, go ahead and merit in your purchase, meaning in the kinyan that you made in this woman, because obviously she's a basula. Now Amalei hu namar bered de rava miparzaki le ravashi. So he said to Ravashi, let's do the same thing that Rambam Rebbe did. That is, if we ever want to verify and clarify when it seems like there's no blood, maybe we should do the same process of the laundering that Rambam Rebbe had done. So Malis Ravashi said to him, he said, no. I mean, as we continue on Talmud Beis, he says, Geyut Shalani, our pressing, which is a type of laundering that uses a glass brick, is Kekiba Shalahem, is the same quality as their regular laundering that they do in Eretz Yisrael. And the reason is either because the water in Israel was better for laundering, or because they had certain ingredients that they used in their laundering process, which was better than that in Bavel. Now, our laundering would not make it clean enough to make it that we can get rid of all the different elements, like the shechva zera, to be able to verify with this process. The only way would be if we did our process called giyut. Now, v'yamrit nevet giyutz. Now, if you would entertain to say, okay, so let's do giyutz, which would be the equivalent of their laundering, to then be able to see if there's really tibet damim, that wouldn't be an option either, because ma'avro lechumarta. Because then the rubbing of this glass stone, actually, that cleaning itself would be so, it does such a process, not only would it remove the shechvat zera, it would even remove the drops of blood. So that wouldn't be a good process of verification to see if there's really tibet damim here or not. Nothing more continues with another incident. Again, the friend of Gamliel bar Rabbi. Amalei, so he said to him, Rabbi, ba'alti v'lem etzasi dam. I did bia, I didn't find any blood. So Amalei, but she told him, Rabbi, adayim basulani, I'm still a basula. In other words, he claims he did bia, but he didn't break the basula. So Amalehen, so Gamliel bar Rabbi said to them, hevi uli shtei shefches, bring me two maidservants. Achas basula, v'achas ba'ula, one that's still a basula, and one that's a ba'ula. So he, they brought him. Fayishivin al picha v'shal yayin, and he placed them on top of barrels of wine. Now, Be'ula, by the Be'ula who already lost her Besulim, Recha Noidiv. There was a fragrant aroma coming out of her mouth from the aroma of the wine, because since she was sitting on it, so the Pesach Pesuach went and wafted through her body and came out through her mouth. Besula ain Recha Noidiv, but by Besula, there was no way for the aroma to come through because it was closed with the Besulim, so that didn't have the aroma coming out of her mouth. So Avsu Hishiva says, took this woman too, and also placed her on the barrel of wine. And the aroma didn't come out, so obviously it was closed, and that it was, obviously, although he claims he did Bia, she still was a Besula. So Amalai, he said to him, go ahead and marry in your kinyan, in this woman, because obviously she is a Besula. So the Gemara wonders, why didn't he go ahead and automatically do that inspection just with her? If he knew this concept, why do you have to bring a Besula and a Be'ula and then do it with her? Why don't you just put her on? And then if it didn't go, he would know she's a Besula. So that the Gemara says, no, the Gemara Havashmile, that Rimlibe Rebbe, he heard this tradition, he heard this Gemara, he had learned this, that, as the Gemara says in Masechet Zivamas and of Samach Amud Beis, that this was done once before in history with the Benoisi Yavash Gilad, who they wanted to know which ones were Besulas, which ones were Be'ulas, that could be married into the rest of the Jewish people. But Maisalah Havachaz, he never saw anyone ever do this. Now, Vesava, he thought, Dimolei Kimlei Begava, Dimil Sashav, maybe he wasn't so proficient in this. Maybe he's going to do this type of verification. He doesn't know if it even works. He learned it, but he doesn't know if he knows how to do it. Now, Valav Oirich Aru Lezalzulei Bebenes Yisrael, it's not appropriate to go test out his theories that he had learned in Gemara on Jewish women. So first, he tested it out with Shifchais, with maidservants, and then once he verified that he knows how to do it, what he had learned, so then he went and did it with this woman, and he verified that she's actually a Besula. Mark continues, Hahuda Aslik HaMed Rimlil Hazakin. There was a man that came in front of Rimlil the elder. Amaloi, so he said to him, Rabbi, ba'alti b'lim et sasi dam. I did be it, and I didn't see any dam. Amaloi, but she said to him, Rabbi, mimishpuchas durkatiani. I'm from the family of the durkati. She'enlem, that they don't have loy dam nida, they don't have the blood of menstruation, the loy dam besulim, they don't have the hymenal blood, and therefore, of course, he's not going to find dam. I was a besula, the besulim were there, but there's no blood. So Badagim Lil bekrebiseha, umatsa kedvereha. So Lil went and checked in the family, and he saw that it's true that they don't have dam. They have a very poor supply of that, and therefore they don't have for dam nida, and they don't have dam besulim. So Amalai said to the husband, go ahead and marry in your kinyan. The fact that you didn't see blood doesn't prove anything with this woman, that she wasn't a besula. And Ashrecha, praise be you, that you were lucky that you married a woman that's from Mishpachas Durkadi, as the Gemara will shortly explain what type of a schus is that. But that's what he said, that it's definitely not a complaint that she's not a besula. They don't have dam besulim. So the Gemara asks, my Durkati, what is this family? Why were they called Durkati? Because it's a compound of the word Durkatua. It's a generation that's cut off, meaning that they're cut off from blood, that they don't have dam nida and dam besulim, or actually, as the Aruch says, that they actually are cut off in their generations, that they're not able to conceive as well because they don't have the blood of menstruation, and therefore they don't have children, and they don't have that so easily. Now, however, the Gemara comments that Amr Reb Chanina said, Tanchumen shel hevel nichmar imlil lo iseish. It was a consolation of vanity. It was an empty consolation that Imlil had comforted that man by saying, oh, you're lucky that you found a woman from Mishpachas Durkati that you don't have any problem with dam coming out of the woman. Because actually, the Tanya B'chia had taught in the Braisa, K'shem shasar yafal is, although yeast is not such a great thing. It could cause a lot of things to go sour. But he says, just like yeast is good for dough, because although you don't want too much of it, but a little bit of it is good for the dough, helps it rise, helps it make it into bread. Kach damim yafim leisha. So too, blood is good for the woman, and that is, it helps her conceive, because that's what the lining of the uterus is, which is actually when the period of menstruation is when there wasn't conception, that comes out. But that blood is obviously a sign that which allows for conception, therefore that's actually good for a woman. And therefore, this that the woman doesn't have obviously is a difficulty in fertility. The Tanna Mishum Remeya, and actually was taught in the Remeya, that Kol Isha Shadameh Merubin, any woman that has a lot of this menstruation blood, but now Merubin has mech of children. Again, the same idea, because that actually helps in having children. So therefore, it was Tanchumi Shel Hevel that he said that you're lucky you got such a woman. Now, Itmar, we learned, relating to this machlaikis, that Rabbi Yirmiyahu ba Abba Amar, he said that Zechei b'mekachecha amalei. What he told him was merit in your mekach, as we had quoted in the Gemara before, that he told him that, oh, you're lucky that you got such a woman. Rabbi Yisrael bar Avinam, he says, no, Neschayiv b'mekachecha amalei. He said to him that you became liable in this purchase that you made. In other words, you're now so to speak, stuck with this that you had made. As Rashi brings, we find the word in chavala adam, another something that's bad for a person, is called a chayva, a liability, that this is a liability that he has such a woman. So the Gemara explains. Bishlam al-Mandam in the Sky, we understand according to the version that says you became liable now with this. In other words, you don't have a tainus besulim, because the fact that there's no blood doesn't prove anything, because she's mishpachas durkati, but it's not such a good thing. Well, that makes sense, because Hainu Reb Chanina, so Reb Chanina said that that's bad, because it makes it more difficult for conception. But Elamanda Mazacha, as we had quoted the version previously, but according to the one that he told him that, wow, you merited to have such a woman, my zechusa, what type of a merit is that? It's bad because it makes it more difficult for fertility. And I think my answer is no, deloy osi ledei sabeg nida. It doesn't come to cases of doubtful situations of nida, because they don't have that much of the dam anyway, and therefore you're not running into halachic problems with nida. That's a merit that a person has, that he avoids those problems. So although that there was obviously other challenges, but he said you're zeicha, that you're lucky in the halachas of nida, that you got a woman from mishpachas durkati. Mar brings another story. Ahuda asli kamid de Rebbe. Amalei, so he said to Rebbe, but alti v'limitzasi dam, that I did be, and I didn't find any blood. But Amrloi, the woman said to Rebbe, I dying besula yisi. I'm still a besula. Now, v'shnei b'tzayis habit. It was a year of a famine, and raw Rebbe shepinem shechem. Rebbe saw that their faces were blackened because of the hunger. So tziva alein v'chnisum l'merchet. So he commanded them, and he made them go ahead and bathe themselves in the bath. V'achilim v'hashkim, he gave them to eat, he gave them to drink, and then v'chnisim l'cheder, then he put them into a room. Ba'al u'matzadam, then he had bia, and he saw dam. Amalai, now he told them, leich z'chei b'mekhecha, go ahead and merit in your purchase, because obviously she is a besula. And Kari Rebbe Alem, Rebbe recited upon them a pasuk in Eicha that says, tzafad oyer mal'atzmo, which Rashi brings either that means to say that their skin clung, was clinging to their bones, meaning they were just like a sack of bones, or that it means that their skin was blackened on their bones. That is yavish hayikaitz, they were dry like wood. In other words, of course, neither one had the capacity to fully consummate this relationship, because they just didn't have the energy. And once they ate and drank and they were bathed, then they were able to consummate the relationship and then to see the dam besulim. Nothing more. Continuing to the next Mishnah, again continuing on this theme about the halachas of ksuba, talking about the primary components of a ksuba. So the Mishnah tells us, Besula ksubas mesayim. A besula that never had bia before, she still has her besulim, she gets a ksuba of 200, v'almana mana, and almana gets half of that, she gets just a mana. Now, however, the Mishnah tells us that a besula, whether she's a besula that was an almana, even if she was married once before, but she was widowed, or grusha, she was divorced, or v'chalutza, she was divorced through the procedure of chalitza, which comes out in the mitzvah of Yibum, but if it's min ha'erisin, that she was either widowed, divorced, or chalitz from engagement, and then she went and married someone else, then kesubasan, their kesuba from the second man, is mosayim, is 200. And the reason is because when a man marries a woman that was only engaged, even though she was widowed, divorced, or chalitz, he's marrying her under the assumption that she's still a besula, because a woman is forbidden to have intimate relations with the man that she's just engaged to, and she was never yet had nesuin. So therefore she gets a ksuba of masayim, and v'yeshlen tainis besulim, and therefore the husband does have a claim. If the second husband, when he consummates the relationship, says that he doesn't find any besulim, then she loses her entire ksuba, because that would still be considered mekach tois, although she was engaged. But the assumption is you're still a besula because you never consummated a relationship with the first man, and therefore if he doesn't find the besulim, she loses her entire ksuba. Now the Gemara clarifies the terminology that we bring up in this Mishnah, my almana. and that's related to the actual halacha of our Mishnah. What's the term of almana? Now, some of the Rishonim say that the term of almana, the first half of the word of ilam, would mean that she's mute, she's silent because of the death of her husband. The question is, what's with the second half of the nun hay, which is mem nun hay? Why is the almana called that? So Amar Rav Chana, Bagdisa, which means that he was from Baghdad, almana was al shem mana, was because of the second half of the word, which means a mana. In other words, because if this woman now gets married after she was widowed, her whole kasuba is only a mana. That's why she's called now almana, which that means to say that her kasuba is changed. Now the Gemara asks, but almana mina erisin, but a woman that was widowed but from engagement, which our Mishnah said that she gets a kasuba of Masayim, not just a mana, so Ma'iklam Ema. Why would she be called an amana? She's not getting a mana, she's getting a Masayim. So the Gemara says, Aidi daha karal amana, since we called the primary widow, which is from a marriage, which that's most commonly a case that happens, so hanami karal amana, so we also called the woman that was widowed from engagement amana too, although yes, then it wouldn't be necessarily appropriate to call amana because she's not getting a mana, she's getting a Masayim. Now the Gemara asked, but Amana dechsiva b'dayraisa, but the Torah called a woman al amana. Now, in the times of the Torah, they never yet had instituted a ksuba. So, Michael, what are you going to say over there? How could the Torah call, like when it says that amana is forbidden to marry a kohen? What? Well, how are you calling her amana? There's not even a ksuba to say that she gets amana in that ksuba to call amana. How does the Torah call her an amana? So now the Gemara answers, Dasi din Rabbana, the Mesakna Lamana. The Torah calls her an Amana because in the future the rabbis are going to create a ksuba which gives this woman Amana. So therefore now the Torah really calls her Almana. Now the Gemara wonders, Umik Kasav Kra, does the Torah write to call something La'asid based on what in the future is going to be, is what's going to happen? So the Gemara says, and yes, just like it says the Pasuk by Maisa Voracious in the beginning of the Torah. It says, "V'shem ha'nor ha'shlish shechidekel." There were these four rivers that were separating from Aden. Now it says that the name of the third river was Chidekel, was a Tigris. Who ha'ho'inlich kidmas Asher, that goes to the east of Asher. Now, between Rabbi Yisrael, Yisrael told in the Braisa, that what's Asher? Zu Sleika, that's a reference to this name of the city called Sleika. Now, Umihavya, was Sleika a built city at the time of the creation of the world when that's what it was told about when it says ho'inlich kidmas Asher? Obviously not. El Dasida. In the future, there's going to be such a place, and this is where the river runs by. Sachanam Dasida here also, that regarding calling this woman Amana is based on the future tense, where then there's going to be a ksuba of Amana for this woman, and that's why the Torah calls her even now an Amana. Now the Gemara continues, we're quoting different Agadic statements from the same Amayr, V'amr of Chana Bagdisa. Says matar. Now, as Rashi points out, here the Gemara is not saying like the previous interpretation of expounding the word itself. Rather, it's just logic that he's saying that rain has the following qualities: mashke, it waters; mirava, it saturates; umezavel, and it fertilizes the ground; umaadin, and it gives the luster and the shine of the earth, meaning with the fruits; umamshech, and it also brings forth the fruits, the produce from the ground. Now, Amar Rava by Bishmal, Vitam, and some say it was Rabbi Yemer by Shalom Yemikra. What's the pasuk that supports this interpretation of Rechana Bagdisa? It's pasuk in Tehillim. Pasuk says, Tilomeha, the ridges of Eretz Yisrael, Rave, it's saturate. Nachas Gedudeha, you should settle its furrows. Bervivim to Megigena, that you should soften it with showers. Simcha Tevarech, its growth, you should bless. Now, on that Rashi explains, we see all the different qualities of rain, because the Pasuk says, Rave, that you should saturate, that's a reference to both watering and to saturating. When it says, to Megigena, that you should soften it, meaning Eretz Yisrael, with showers, that's a reference to being mezabel, to fertilizing. And when it says in the Pasuk, Tzimcha Tevarech, that its growth you should bless, that's a reference to what comes out of the ground, which is the miadin, like we said, it's the luster from the fruits that are coming out from the ground, and the mamshach, that it brings forth fruits from the earth. A similar statement, Amr Rebbe Lazar, he says, Mizbeach, just like we said before regarding rain, so he talks about now the altar, is, first of all, one quality is it's miziach, it removes, which the Gemara's original assumption is that it removes the sins of the Jewish people. Umazin en, it provides sustenance, and that's in the merit of the sacrifices. The world is provided with sustenance because the karbonis, which actually the Gemara elsewhere talks about every type of carbon that's brought, that type of produce that it comes from, it goes ahead and causes blessing to that produce that it comes from. Mechavev, it endears the Jewish people to their Father in heaven. And Mechaper provides atonement. Now the Gemara wonders, Hainu Mechaper, Hainu Mezich. Providing atonement is the same thing as removing the sins. So that the Gemara says, no, Mezich is Gezeris. It removes the evil decrees from the Jewish people, Umechaper Avainus, and provides atonement for their sins. So one is the decrees, and one is atoning for the sins. Another statement from that previous Amoyer V'Amrav Chanabak Disa, he says, Tamri, dates, again talking about the qualities of certain elements. So here's talking about dates. It's Meshachanon. It heats, it warms up a person. Mazba'an, it satiates a person. Meshalshlan, it's a diuretic. It makes a person being able to relieve himself. Ma'ashran, it gives a person strength. And V'Lemefankan, it doesn't make a person a delicate type of a person, although it's very sweet and you would think a person would become a very type of like a isness. It doesn't do that. And these are all praises about dates. Now, Amar Rav, Rav says, Alchot tomorrow, if a person eats dates, Al Yera, he shouldn't go ahead and execute any judgment in Halacha. And the reason is because it disturbs his intellect as a shikr, as a person that's a drunkard. Now, that Gemara's Meitzvah, is that really so? But we learn a Brice that says, tomorrow dates, Shachar Tzv'Arvis, if you have it in the morning or you have it in the evening, Yafis, they're very good. As Rashi points out, the general rule of thumb is that after eating as a dessert, it's very good. Meaning in the morning, people generally eat what's called Pashachris, they eat breakfast, as the Gemara says, Bab Metzia, and in the evening, when everyone eats their dinner, so after eating, then dates are good. Now, B'mincha, in the afternoon, Ro'os, they're very bad. And that's because it's before you ate your evening meal, and it's after you slept your afternoon nap. But Tzaraim, but in the noontime, meaning after you ate your meal, and you're satiated, then in Kamaisin, there's nothing as good as having dates at that time. And the reason is because it's actually better than the evening time, because in the daytime, there's nothing stopping you from going to the field to be able to relieve yourself whenever you want to go. But at nighttime, especially in the Talmudic times when people didn't have lavatories in their house, it's a great bother to have to go out and get dressed and go out in the cold to go out to the fields to relieve yourself. And the best time is at noontime. Moreover, umavatlus shlesha devarim, it nullifies three bad things. First of all, it nullifies machshavara, bad thoughts, which means to say worry, because actually it makes a person rejoice when he eats dates. And moreover, and at noontime, it's a time of light and rejoicing, and it's a good time of the day. So that's the best time. It removes this thoughts of worry. V'chol ma'ayim, it removes the intestinal indigestion problems that are in the intestines. And v'tachtonis, it also removes the problem of hemorrhoids, which again could come if a person doesn't have his system cleaned out. But one thing, the Gemara's question is that we see that dates are good. Moreover, it's even good for the thought. So why would you say that if you eat dates, can you not be meir, can you not judge a halachic decision? So the Gemara answers, mi amrin delei ma'alu, did we say dates are not good? Hilui ma'alu, they're very good. But if right after you have dates, it disturbs a person's thought process, just like regarding wine. Wine is definitely a good thing. But we find the Amamar, the master says, whoever drinks a revius of wine should not judge halacha, because again, he's not able to think so clearly. Same thing happens with dates, it has a similar characteristic. So yes, it's good, but it's still not good for halachic judgment. Or the Gemara says, v'ibay same if you want, you can say loy kasha. It's not a question because where Rav said that you shouldn't be yaira is mikmei naham, is if you had dates before you ate bread. The Braisa says that it is good, which could be even good for pasni halacha, is labasanama, is if you had it after eating bread. Dama Abai, like Abai said, amli aim, my mother told me, which actually is talking about his woman that brought him up because his mother died when he was born, is tamri mikmei naham, is that if you have dates before bread, is bad. It's kinargal dekul. It's like an axe to a tree, which is just it's destructive. Basunam, if you have dates after bread, is ki avr ledasha. It supports the body like the bolt supports the door. That's how it supports what a person has eaten. So it depends. If it's before bread, then it's bad. If it's after bread, then it's good. Now, parenthetically, the Gemara explains this last term that we describe when it's that like a bolt to a door, the term of door that is used is dasha. So the Gemara says dasha, a door. Why is it called dasha? So Amarov is because it's a compound of the word derech sham. It's the path that's through there. I mean, in other words, how do you want to get into the house? It's through the doorway. That's what's called dasha. And similarly, darga, a ladder, Amar Rav, he explains why is it called darga, is because derech gag. This is the path to get to the roof. That's how they would get in Talmudic times with the ladder. Purya, why is the bed called Purya? So Amar Papa, Shepar and Varav in the lab, because they're fruitful and they multiply. That's a place of procreation. That's why it's called Purya. Now, Amar of Nachman by Yitzchak, so he said, and as we continue on top of Yad Alpha Manav, he says, Af Anu Neimer, let's also do the similar type of expounding and darshaning words, why they're called, which is why is it called Islandess? This that the sage is called a woman, that her body didn't mature for her to be able to have children, the reason why she's called an Islandess is because of a duchriness. In other words, dacher is the term of an isle, of a ram. In other words, that this woman is like a ram, is the lo yalda, because just like a male ram, which is a ram is a male, is that it cannot have children, so too we call her an islandess from the word of isle, of a duchroness, which is like this male characteristic of not being able to have children, so to this woman, they were called an islandess because she can have children either.